Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting what you say. Today is the day. Good morning and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings. It's the 15th of August. The sun is rising and the Son of God is risen. That is the central good news at the heart of the gospel of Jesus. For sin is forgiven, death is beaten, and whatever the headlines bring and the difficulties of life, which are so often so real, there is still always underneath all of that hope and future in the beautiful kingdom of Jesus. I'm your host for Faith Radio Mornings, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by Logan Rausch, who handles the sound and the board, helps book some of the many guests we have for the show. Good morning, Logan.
Hey, morning, Peter.
Always great to see you. I love our time in the studio together. And of course, Paul Perreault in the newsroom keeps the news flowing throughout the day, also helps bring many of these guests. Paul, love being a part of this show with you. You doing okay this morning?
Doing fine.
Well, before we get to some of the news and the topics of the day with you two and with our whole listening audience, I think you know me well enough to know that one thing I love about our Christian faith is that in 2,000 years of people following Jesus, we sort of have this large treasure trove of wisdom from mothers and fathers of our faith that have gone before us, walked out this journey. And I thought we'd start our morning with a bit of wisdom, this time from a 14th century mystic and theologian, Julian of Norwich. Julian ministered profoundly to the people of England during the bleak time of the Black Plague. I can't imagine just coming out of my home each day and thinking this might be the day that I catch this plague that is just devastating the English countryside. And yet Julian walked out of her hut each day into these villages, and she just brought such incredible light and hope in the darkness. And among the many things she wrote back in that time as she reflected on the hardship of life and God's presence in it was this. She writes, "If there is anywhere on earth a lover of God who is always kept safe, well, I know nothing of that, for that was not shown to me. But this was shown, that in falling and rising again, we are always kept in the same precious love. If there's anywhere on earth a lover of God who is always kept safe, I know nothing of it. That was not shown to me. But this was shown, that in the falling and rising again, we are always kept in the same precious love." And as I saw that quote yesterday, it called to mind a great interview we had with Pastor Steve Weens yesterday on the show. And he talked about God being with us in the wilderness. And it made me sort of think about, I guess, one of the inescapable realities is that life just isn't that easy. The world isn't able to bring us maybe the peace of the soul that we deeply desire. I'm sure you listening this morning, like me, you travel around the world and you see people and you're in relationships and in churches, and sometimes we scratch beneath the surface of our lives. And there's a bit of longing and desperation there. And I know Julian, as she went out during those years, she was proclaiming that there is a peace that only comes from God's love. I love that thought. There is hope in that. I hope it starts your day well, and I'm grateful, I know, as host of the show, to gather together with you. Even though I can't see you, I know you're there, and it just brings such strength to the heart to know that listeners from all around our Midwest and our country were gathering together like this. So we have a great first hour ahead on our show on Faith Radio Mornings. We've got Greg Yao from InterVarsity Fellowship. He's up first to talk about the increasing challenges of being a Christian on college campuses, and I'm sure there's many mothers and fathers out there and grandparents that are seeing their kids go back to school. I know my oldest is heading back to school here for the first year. And he'll talk about the challenges of life being a Christian on college campuses. He'll be followed by Kent Kaiser, who's chair of communications at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. And there's a lot of elections that happened around the Midwest in particular yesterday. So he'll talk about some of the results of that. And so with that, setting up our show this morning, grab your coffee or tea or whatever you like in the morning, and we'll get started next with Greg Yao of InterVarsity Fellowship. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Peter Kapsner, and delighted to be joined on the line at this time by Greg Yao, who's part of InterVarsity, and he's the senior assistant to the president, and wanted to get Greg on again this morning. He's a regular contributor to the show to talk about some of the events coming out of our campuses. But there's even a lawsuit that has been put forth because of this sort of deregulation of the groups, or they've taken some of the Christian groups out of play in these campuses. So, Greg, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for the opportunity, Peter.
I'd love to get your perspective in terms of what's happened. Just kind of talk our listeners through. I believe it was a university down in Iowa where we saw that they basically just said all the Christian groups and even all the religious groups had to break apart, and they no longer could have a presence on campus. So talk our listeners through what's going on right now.
Sure. The University of Iowa decided that it was impermissible for religious groups to have religious criteria for leadership. So, for example, InterVarsity Christian Fellowship could not ask or require its leaders to be Christians before serving as leaders. They said, well, that's discrimination. You're preventing non-religious people from being leaders on in your campus groups. The religious groups have all responded and said, in fact, if you care about diversity and tolerance and inclusion, you should protect religious groups rather than penalize them for being faithful to their religious traditions. And so InterVarsity and about 38 other groups were told, either change your leadership requirements or you will no longer be registered, which means you can't advertise on campus, you can't participate in student activities fairs, you can't reserve rooms on campus. It becomes very difficult to do ministry in those situations.
Well, and I have to believe that that is a pretty significant blow to just sort of academic exploration and freedom and just the diversity of ideas. I mean, if we get rid of all of the groups on campus, then at that point, you're really sort of just subject to whatever the general academic ideas are of that given institution.
It's true, and I think the challenge is they've taken a good principle, non-discrimination and tolerance, and taken it to kind of an illogical extreme. I actually had one administrator at another campus tell me, we've gotten ourselves into a crazy place and we don't know how to stop.
And I think it, being a part of academia myself these last 15, 20 years, I mean, there is really this idea that the professors are the font of all wisdom so often, and they kind of drive the conversation. And I think about these young people that are so... They're so formative in terms of the voices that they hear. And if there can't be a diversity of voices, then they really end up getting shaped by the ethos there, and which can be really the only way to think about things is the way we think about things. And that can get tricky.
It can be. And I think what we're challenging the university to do is live up to its highest ideals. You want a marketplace of ideas. You want to expose people to the full diverse range of thoughts and beliefs. Then allow religious groups to flourish on campus, because we represent an important voice civically. We represent an important support system for students with religious backgrounds, and we actually increase the quality of the conversation on campus. And I think where professors are principled, even if they disagree with us theologically, they've actually stood up and said, this is the kind of silencing of views that we shouldn't have at the university.
Well, and that's part of the heritage of university life, is that we get to critically examine a variety of ideas and think about, so what are the merits of those ideas? How do we explore the range of them? That's really how we grow both intellectually and spiritually, right?
Absolutely. I think it's critically looking at your beliefs, including your own beliefs. That's so important for college students. And when they have a supportive community to do that in, they're able to think critically, and then they're able to embrace truth in a new way. So for InterVarsity, one of our commitments is to engage students in scripture study. We want every student to learn how to study scripture and to do it regularly, because we're convinced as college students, if they look deeply at our own tradition, if they study the scriptures, they're going to discover Jesus. And when they discover Jesus for themselves as adults, they're going to be able to make faith commitments that will last a lifetime.
Well, and I think that's the more important point than even the idea of exploring a diversity of ideas at university, which is really important. But we're talking again about some of the most disorienting times of our young people, when maybe they're leaving their homes, they're heading out on their own for the first time, even though they're still on kind of a campus and protected in that way. There's the sense in which, gosh, who am I in relation to the world? And you guys at InterVarsity do such great work helping orient them to the world. So this puts more than just diversity of thought at risk. It really puts that spiritual journey at risk without these clubs to gather together.
Absolutely. We've met thousands of students every year, and we're beginning to meet students right now as they return to campus, who are looking for a place for a supportive community. What I love even more almost are the non-Christians, people who've not yet discovered Jesus, who are coming to our groups and saying, I came to college, I realized I need something more than I had in high school, and your group has welcomed me. I would love to study scripture and discover who this God you claim to serve is. And over the last 10 years, we've watched the number of people making first-time decisions to follow Jesus more than double on college and university campuses. We're seeing it among students. We're seeing it among faculty. I believe even though the environment can often be hostile or indifferent at best, students and faculty are spiritually hungry, and they're beginning to find answers in Jesus.
Well, and again, it provides that environment then to keep exploring. I know for me, I started out at a state university and was glad to do so. I was a baseball player down at this university. And yet, boy, without any kind of Christian environment in which I found myself, it can be a pretty difficult life for young people in terms of what happens in the partying scene and as they're trying to find their sense of identity. So I have to believe InterVarsity provides a real safe space for students to explore. And it does then shine a light into these sort of darker places where people can kind of say, hey, maybe there's a different way to live.
Absolutely. And I think it also equips them to engage in their classrooms differently as they meet older students who have said, oh, I took that exact same class 3 years ago. And as a Christian, here's how I've learned to affirm what's true in that class. Here's where I critiqued it from in light of Scripture. And here's where I'm trying to develop a new way of thinking about this subject that allows me to combine my Christian convictions with the best scholarship in ways that actually help people around me. And I love watching that older students discipling the younger students around vocational stewardship and the ways that they approach their studies, in addition to all the things that they do socially together.
That's Gregory Yao, who's a senior assistant to the president for InterVarsity Fellowship. And if you'd like to join the conversation, we would love to have you. If you have any questions about life on college campus or InterVarsity Fellowship, Greg would be a great one to talk to you about that. You can call in the studio or you can text in at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Again, maybe you have a son or daughter or a grandson or granddaughter that's getting ready to head back to school. And we can talk about some of these things this morning with Greg. And Greg, I would love any suggestions you have then for young people as they're preparing to go back to school or maybe start school for the first time. How do they begin to integrate their faith and how do they get involved from a Christian perspective?
I'd encourage students who are going to college first to find a Christian fellowship on campus and then to choose one. We're finding college students often want to visit three or four, keep a toe in each one. And I think the best thing to do, choose one good, faithful evangelical student group and just make a commitment, because as soon as you make a commitment, the people around you can commit to you. I think the second thing I would say is read the scriptures. More than anything, I want college students to learn to study the scriptures so that they can feed themselves. Find a fellowship that will teach you to study the scriptures and then get involved in community. I think in the United States, too often we think my faith is really just between me and Jesus. And the biblical model, I think, is Jesus calls us into a community through which we're discipled and disciple others, through which we witness to others, and through which our faith is supported. So those are the three things I would encourage students to do. Commit to a fellowship, study scripture, and then commit to the community of people around you. Yeah. And I think if you do that, those are the beginning steps.
It is so important to have a series of relationships, as you said. I know that especially when you're leaving the household, to get involved with other people and find a new community is one of those just critical steps to staying in within the faith and walking it out. So, Greg, when we come back, I would love to get your perspective on kind of what you see as some of the trends among young people. What are the questions they're asking? What are some of maybe the troubling realities that they're trying to sort out in their lives? And where's the hope as well in our next generation? So more in a moment with Greg Yao on Faith Radio Mornings. It's about 21 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Peter Kapsner, and delighted to be joined on the line by Greg Yao of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. And Greg, I asked before the break, and I'd be curious your take on it, is in the years you've been doing this, obviously I'm sure you've seen changes in some of the questions students have and young people are wrestling with in our culture. Are there some significant ones you've seen over these last couple years where you'd say, this is sort of part of their life, this is part of what they're wondering about, that maybe wasn't true 10 years ago?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we've seen is an increase in the rates of clinical depression and suicide on college and university campuses, which seem to be driven by a higher degree of hopelessness than we've seen in the past. This is the first generation that doesn't believe it will do economically better than its parents. It's the first generation where they're seeing continual conflict and war externally, in part driven by social media. They're more in touch with the brokenness of the world than prior generations, I think. So hopelessness is a significant question for a lot of students. They are asking the question, how can I make a difference? And they aren't sure, but when they're given opportunities to make a difference, they want to do so. Then I think part of the challenge is, how do they make long-term commitments to make a difference rather than pursue something which may be trendy for that year or two period? Beyond how to make a difference and is there hope, I think the third question that they're asking in a slightly different way than prior generations is, who am I? Because of the way that people use social media to portray kind of their best selves on Instagram, Snapchat, or Facebook, students today are constantly bombarded with pictures and statements by people who they perceive to be their peers doing the perfect thing every time. And so it raises the expectations that they have, that they should have a perfect life that does that and do things and look perfectly all the time. And that creates a sense of perfectionism that I think is a little unprecedented in prior generations. So when you combine those three things together, I think what you have is a deep sense of dissatisfaction with the way the world is and the way they are, a deep desire for hope. And our experience has been that can either move in a very dark direction, or it's an opportunity to point them to Jesus, who offers them hope, speaks truth to them about who they are, both in their failures and in their potential, and then allows them to make a difference in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it is such an opportunity, isn't it, when there's just this disorientation and all these questions that you've articulated. And an InterVarsity Fellowship can really come around these young people and give them not just a sense of hope in the midst of school, but I've got to believe it becomes sort of this foundation and platform for them for the rest of their lives.
It really does. I think when in college is the time when you make the decisions that will shape your life. I think for most people, until you have children again, and then you reassess, what am I doing, who am I becoming? And so if we can provide them with a theological and spiritual and intellectual foundation for their lives, we're helping them make life choices. That's why I'm so excited that we'll have about 16 to 18,000 college students at our Urbana Student Missions Conference this coming December 27th through the 31st, because I've met people who've been to prior Urbana conferences in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s who said, as a college student, I made a decision either to go overseas or to be a strong advocate for world mission in my local congregation, and the lessons I learned there have carried me for the last 40 years.
Yeah, it's just,
It's why I love having students tell me, I learned to study scripture this past weekend at this conference. I'm going to do this the rest of my life. And I've met alumni who said, that's where I learned.
They're phenomenal stories. I mean, I think you probably have in your time at InterVarsity just so many stories of young people that, as I know it's kind of a cliche, but it's this idea of, hey, I've been able to take the faith of my childhood and really make it my own during these experiences with InterVarsity at college.
Absolutely. That was my own experience. I grew up going to church, went to youth group, and I remember the summer before I went to college, I felt like God was saying, will this be your faith or not? If not, just walk away and be done with it. Stop pretending. And in college, I met a community in InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, learned to study the scriptures, learned to think Christianly, learned to be a witness, and that shaped the trajectory of my life.
So, Greg, we do have a caller from Sioux Falls, Lorenzo, and I'll just sort of read the question at this point, too, just in terms of the importance of maintaining InterVarsity Fellowship in these college campuses. Lorenzo writes that a little bit surprised that a Christian club can't have a requirement for leadership, which is part of the reason why it's being disbanded, according to Iowa. And he says, if a Spanish club had leaders, would it be okay for them to be required to speak Spanish? And so why can't a Christian club have requirements relative to its purpose and function, whereas maybe a language club, hypothetically like that, Lorenzo says, would have requirements?
That's a great question, Lorenzo. What the university has said is that there are certain protected classes around gender, ethnicity, and religion, among other things, that people may not discriminate along. And they've said choosing leaders who reflect those characteristics is discrimination. And we've pointed out you allow fraternities and sororities, which select along gender lines. You have athletic teams, which select along able-bodied status. It just makes sense that the veterans group on campus should be led by somebody with military experience. And so what we've tried to point out to the university is you're inconsistent in your application of this rule. And in fact, you are not serving the people you want to serve. I asked a university official at another university who had a similar rule, if a group of women who'd been sexually assaulted wanted to create a group just for women to have a safe place to discuss their trauma and their healing, would you allow that? And the university official was forced to say, under our current rules, we would not. And I said, how is it possible then this actually serves students rather than hurts students? And they admitted they were dumbfounded. They did not know what to do. So I think it really is the case that the universities have gotten themselves into an intellectual dead end and they don't know where to go. And we're saying common sense should apply here. Religious groups should be led by religious people.
It's Greg Rial of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. Greg, just before we run here, we've got about 30 seconds. If I'm a parent or a grandparent, where can I go to sort of find out more about the school that my kids might be going to and where how they can get involved with InterVarsity?
If you go to our website, intervarsity.org, you can find a list of all the college campuses we're on. I also encourage you, if we're not on a campus, go to CRU, NAVS, Fellowship of Christian Athletes, Chi Alpha. There are so many good Christian fellowships on campus. Each of their websites would have a place where you could find if there's a group on campus.
Lorenzo, thanks for the great question this morning. Greg, time is so short on these conversations. Really appreciate you coming on this morning. Give us a sense of, as we're getting ready to go back to school here, where kids can get involved in Christian communities.
Come to our website, intervarsity.org, and find the campus. Connect with a staff worker there. They'd be happy to introduce you to other students. Or when you get on campus that first week, every Christian fellowship, including InterVarsity, will be there looking to welcome you. So keep your eye out for posters, people on the quads tabling. Come up and introduce yourself. We have been praying for you all summer, and we are looking forward to meeting you.
Greg, thanks for taking the time this morning. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
Love that conversation with Greg Yao. I just can't think of a more important piece of advice as our kids are going back to school, especially at university, to get involved in a Christian community. It really can help orient and anchor them through these 4 years of university life. Well, Ken Kaiser just walked into the studio. I'm looking forward to our conversation up next on Faith Radio Mornings. We'll talk through the many election results that happened last night around our country. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, we were joined by Dr. Rosemary Stein, and she was talking about the importance of starting our day with just some time with our kids.
I like to keep our breakfast simple, but I do think they should be thoughtful at the same time. But I like to make sure that the family is sitting together. This is such an important time, if you're able to, even to take 5 to 10 minutes. That your face should be the last face that your child sees before they head off to school. And that way they know who they're accountable to. And parents today, we're not sitting down with our children. We're not praying with them in the morning. We're not blessing their day. And that is the time to do that. Well, you're sitting around, you've just maybe done a very quick little devotional. Then you pray and you send your children off in the care of the Lord. We need to go back to those kinds of schedules, the ones where we're actually thinking, you know, a lot can happen in my child's day today, and so I need to give that back to God.
Great conversation with Dr. Stein yesterday. I know she just had so many tips as we're getting our kids ready to go back to school, just how to parent them from a social and psychological and spiritual level. If you want to catch that entire interview, you can head to myfaithradio.com and in the search bar put in Rosemary Stein or something about kids back to school, and you'll find a great interview with her. Well, we've got Kent Kaiser in studio up next, and we're going to talk through the many election results that happened last night and the impact they might have for the fall midterms coming up next on Faith Radio Mornings.
Carl Menninger, the famous psychiatrist, wrote a book titled, Whatever Happened to Sin? Good question. This is Jim Garlow. Sin, it's a word we rarely hear in our politically correct culture today. In our avoidance of anything that might smack of criticizing or stepping on someone's rights or someone's toes, we'd rather think in terms of messing up. Or how about making an error? Or we just say, it's just a failure, a shortcoming in my personality. Sure. Anything but sin. Pastors aren't even saying it in the pulpits. It just doesn't occur in the language, Christian or not. It comes from the Greek word, harmatia, to miss the bullseye. And Proverbs 20, verse 9, asks the pertinent question, who can say I've kept my heart pure? Who can say I am clean without sin? And when we do say that, let's not call it anything but what it actually is. Sin. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
And those bagpipes, of course, are the bagpipes of Dr. Ken Kaiser, who is the chair of communications here at the University of Northwestern. St. Paul. Kent, remind us again why we start out your segment with bagpipes.
Because I love bagpipes. I play bagpipes. That particular tune was written by my bagpipe instructor from McAllister College, specifically for me. So it's called Dr. Kaiser's Monster.
That's a great name. Yeah. Well, love that you join us each week here on Faith Radio Mornings. I know as a prof that you get to spend some time in the summer away. You've been up near the Arctic Circle. You've been in the North Woods recently. Yeah, how are you preparing for your last couple weeks here before
you
start school?
We don't have a couple weeks. Tomorrow was the first day of full day of meeting. So summer's over, sadly.
Yeah, you've been in denial about
this
right now?
Other people think of Labor Day as being the end of summer. We're full into it by then.
Now, that rough academic schedule, I know it's tough on us to have 8-10 weeks off in the summer like that. Well, thanks for coming on. I love talking. I know you worked on political campaigns, and I love talking just about some of the ways in which we communicate and some of the election results and just all of those topics relative to that. And, of course, there was a lot of results that came in last night that happened in Wisconsin, in Minnesota, in our listening audience in Connecticut as well as Vermont. What was your takeaway, just generally speaking, of the results last night?
Well, I think the general takeaway, there were just a couple of them. One is that people are interested in things that are new and new shiny objects, which is not something different from usual, I suppose. And we saw that Trump has a positive effect for a candidate. Yesterday in Minnesota, we had a primary for governor, and the former governor of the state, who was in two terms ago, went up against the endorsed Republican candidate, who, by the way, was a candidate who lost the last election cycle. So it's interesting. You had these two in our primary, but the former governor, Pawlenty, had badmouthed Trump in the last campaign, and he really got shellacked by the newer candidate, Johnson. Johnson is a really solid candidate. I mean, a friend of Northwestern for sure, and the kind of candidate we can be proud of. Pawlenty, honestly, didn't have much to recommend him. I think it was people saw through that it was just a lot of ego trying to get back into the ring when he had never won with 50% of the vote or more in the past. It was always a plurality that he won with. And so, you know, he's trying to make these arguments that he could win. Well, you know, maybe, maybe not. I mean, there wasn't that much evidence to suggest that he would actually be able to prevail in November. So I don't think, again, I don't really think he had a lot to recommend him other than the fact that he had a big war chest of money. But when he's bashing President Trump, you kind of got to wonder how is that going to go in a campaign in November. Where what's he carving out for himself? You know, and when we've had, you know, we had an election where Trump nearly won in Minnesota. So that's kind of what happened here. Some of the other races that are kind of interesting. I mean, for our friends in Hartford, they've got a Democratic governor right now who's really unpopular, and so this is like ground zero for Republican efforts to take over more of liberal New England. Right now, there are six states in New England, and Republicans hold four of the governorships. So all of the northern ones, Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, plus Massachusetts, the only two that aren't Republican governors right now are Rhode Island and Connecticut. And so we have this unpopular governor there in Connecticut who is not running for reelection. And so people are watching this race because now we've got two businessmen who are up against one another for the November election on both the Republican and the Democratic side. And Republicans are really hoping that their candidate will win there.
Yeah, it is, and you referenced the impact maybe the president has on these different election results. I know last week he tweeted out after the basic primary results that he was 5 for 5, the candidates that he endorsed. And you referenced the former governor, Tim Pawlenty, here of Minnesota, that even though he had the war chest of money, he had the name recognition, he didn't stand a chance.
Right, and Trump didn't actually, I don't think Trump actually stepped into this race and tweeted or anything about it, but just the fact that Pawlenty had badmouthed the president probably helped to do him in. In this primary. Another interesting one is which was mentioned in the news, which was the first transgender candidate for governor, Hallquist. And it's not likely that Hallquist is going to win, but certainly will make a splash because Vermont has not failed to reelect somebody for governor in, 100 years or something. So it's not likely that Hallquist will win. I don't even know whether to say he or she.
You know, well, but it's part of the difficult conversation with us, right? In terms of, I think, and when we see people in leadership, that it begins to sort of normalize things in our country. I think we can safely say the president, in the way that he has led, sometimes through his communication channels, has brought a normalization to Twitter for some of this back and forth kind of communication. So there is impact of the way people are when they go into public office, and a transgender candidate for governor, it goes a long ways towards normalizing this for good or ill in our society.
Right. And while a man, Hallquist, was somewhat famous there locally because as the head of the electric cooperative, was in a public eye, and so that's sort of the basis for that candidacy. And then in Wisconsin, we have an interesting race brewing here for governor, because Scott Walker, the governor, has battled with the now Democratic candidate who prevailed yesterday in the past. This candidate by the last name of Evers is the head of the state education. They actually elect that person. In Wisconsin, the commissioner of education is actually elected. In some places like Minnesota, that person's appointed. Many places that person appointed, but there they happen to be elected. So Walker will be up against somebody else who has actually been elected statewide before. Walker has a big advantage in terms of money. And we've seen in the past where Walker has had an advantage on the ground in terms of grassroots activists coming out to vote when people didn't expect for him to prevail, or when people didn't even expect other people who are connected to him to prevail. You might remember the last time around in the U.S. Senate election, people didn't expect for Senator Johnson to be reelected, and he was reelected handily over a former senator who he had beaten before. So he's very, very interesting matchup there in Wisconsin, I think.
Well, and I think what's fascinating to watch these days, and it maybe kind of got my attention when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez won, despite having almost no money behind her for this, is that in an age of social media, these candidates are able to get their message out in some new ways without having to have this huge war chest of money, right?
Well, right. And that's what, here in Minnesota, that's what the Republican candidate who prevailed, Johnson, what his people are saying is that they were able to get out there on social media and target exactly the right people. Now, we'll see if that works for November. I'm skeptical. I think that when it comes time for the general election, television ads are still probably the thing that helps the most, plus media coverage. I mean, we've seen how media coverage has done some people in. Here in Minnesota, on the Democratic side, the polls recently showed this one, the current attorney general, having a big advantage in the governor's race, but then she had all kinds of negative press over the past couple of weeks about how she was using people in her office for her campaign. So using official taxpayer dollars, essentially, for campaign purposes. And she was handily defeated in the Democratic primary here in Minnesota yesterday.
It's Ken Kaiser, Chair of Communications Department at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd love to have you. You can call in studio or text at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. You can text your questions or comments in, and we'll definitely get you on air. Ken, when we come back from break, there was one of the election results that I found interesting, and that had to do with somebody running for attorney general here in the state of Minnesota that was accused a couple days ago, domestic violence. It's Keith Ellison. And why sometimes it seems like there's a free pass given and they're allowed to move forward, and other times with these allegations recently that they're just immediately cast aside. So we'll get into that, talk a little bit about the protests or lack thereof in Washington this last weekend as well, when we come back with more on Faith Radio Mornings. It's 10 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Peter Kapsner, and joined in studio by Ken Kaiser. We've been talking about the political results last night. Ken, we were just chatting off the air that I don't remember historically getting into the weeds of politics this much.
No, I hate to get into the weeds too much because most people aren't really particularly in tune with what's going on with a primary. The turnout rate for primaries is extremely low because most people don't care who ultimately winds up being the Republican or the Democratic candidate, which is all that we're determining with a primary.
But is this part of just sort of the 24/7 news cycle that we've seen sort of emerge with just constant news as we're looking for stuff to talk about?
It's not only this 24/7, but it's everywhere too. It's not just on. It used to be that you saw the ads on television, maybe something in the newspaper, but now it's all over social media and everything else. So the bombardment of ads is just incredible. And of course, online is cheaper than television and everything, so we just see more and more and more of it, and earlier But, you know, the real races obviously come up in November, so, you know, we'll talk about them then. But, no, the other one that was interesting yesterday here in Minnesota, the race for attorney general, some people, I mean, nationally, people might recognize the name Keith Ellison because he's the he's in Congress now, and he represents the district that in which Minneapolis resides. And he's also a congressional leader for Democrats, and he decided not to run for Congress again. And by the way, because of that, now the person who won the Democratic primary and is very likely, I mean, like probably a 99% chance of winning in November, is a Somali Muslim immigrant woman. So that'll be a first on all kinds of different fronts once she's elected. But meanwhile, he's running for attorney general in Minnesota after the current attorney general decided she would now unsuccessfully run for the gubernatorial race on the Democratic side. But so he's running for attorney general. And in the last couple of weeks, there have been these really strong allegations of him having engaged in abuse of his, girlfriend.
Yep.
And now it sounds like there's a second accuser, another girlfriend who's come forth and said that he abused her. And this all came about when the one woman who he had lived with, her kid, who's now in his mid-20s, I believe, and has children of his own, he posted on social media about how he and his sibling had observed her being abused and how there was a videotape of this. And the woman then a couple days later actually came forth herself and confirmed all of this, but wouldn't release the videotape. And I don't know I don't know if it still exists. It seems to me in the modern world, if she took this on her phone, which she did, it must exist on the cloud. So some hacker must be able to put it out there on LiveLeaks for us or something. But in any case, so now a second person has come forth. But are we hearing this in the mainstream media? Not yet. And it'll be interesting to see if we do, now that he is the actual candidate for attorney general. Unfortunately, on the Republican side, I mean, we have what I think is an okay candidate, but he's super young. I mean, if you see a picture of him, he looks younger than Logan. I'd probably vote for Logan before I'd vote for this guy.
That's very troubling, Kent. That's very troubling.
But, I mean, you know. So unfortunately, we don't have somebody with great gravitas on the Republican side in the attorney general's race in Minnesota who we can kind of turn to. I think that the guy probably suddenly has a much better chance than he used to. And by the way, the attorney general in Minnesota has not been held by a Republican since my lifetime, maybe very early, like maybe in the early 70s, late 60s, maybe. I just don't even it's been in Democratic hands forever, really. And so it would be a real shocker if a Republican were to win it anyway. But if there's ever a year when that could potentially happen, this would be it. I just wish that there would be a stronger candidate on the Republican side. But nobody would have expected it to be all that competitive. And so you can imagine when the Republicans are deciding who's going to run for that particular office, they don't take it all that seriously.
Yeah,
you know,
they
take seriously governor and other things they think they can actually win.
Well, I think it's representative of sort of this ongoing flipping of some of the maps. And I know certainly states that have and districts that have been deeply red or for the Republican side have suddenly been in play for the Democrats. And now we're talking about some historic districts that have been blue forever and ever are suddenly in play for red. So there is this interesting flipping that's taking place. What do you attribute that to?
Well, I think it's oftentimes just the individual candidates and people are finally waking up when they see somebody who's a little bit out of the ordinary like Trump. He doesn't really fit into our partisan box, you know. And I think, you know, it's just individuals. I mean, like here in Minnesota, we've got a Republican candidate for U.S. Senate, Karen Housley, who's got a famous name because her husband happens to be the coach of the Buffalo Sabres, and he's in the Hockey Hall of Fame and so on. And, you know, people kind of criticize that and say, well, okay, so what does that have to do with her? Well, Minnesotans love to vote for famous names. That's always been the case. Franken, Dayton, who is locally famous. Even Klobuchar, her dad was a famous last name. And the thing is, people love to vote for the famous names even when the person with the famous name wasn't instrumental in establishing the fame. So, for example, Dayton had nothing to do with his grandfather establishing the department store chain, and Klobuchar had nothing to do with her dad's fame as a writer for the Star Tribune. But they were happy to ride those coattails of that fame into office. But even, you know, think about Ventura and Franken, you know, it's like, you know, really they had especially Franken, had really nothing to recommend him in terms of being a public servant or being a U.S. senator. But Minnesotans gladly voted for him. And so, you know, Karen Housley comes along. I'm glad she has a famous name, and she actually has a record of accomplishment as a state senator. So she should be competent in the role.
Right. So. Yeah, it is fascinating. I think since the election of the president, now we're seeing Hollywood people thinking about running for office. Anybody with a name decides to take a shot. It'll still be interesting to see if Oprah comes into play in the 2020 election cycle. Well, Ken, we love having you on, just kind of talking through the results of the elections and the way things get communicated. I'm sorry you have to go back to the grind of a full day of meetings tomorrow. Ken, you must be dreading this with every bone in your body.
I kind of am.
Well, thanks for
the summer.
Thanks for coming on again.
Thanks
just
for
being
me
in
on.
The studio with us. So we'll take a break and wrap up the first hour of our show. I got to admit, I'm still reeling a little bit by Ken's suggestion, Logan, that you, as producer of the show here, that you might be running for office anytime soon.
Well, I'll tell you what. The one platform everyone endorses is their 9-year-old saying that if they were president, they'd be free ice cream day president. Oh. So if I run on that platform, I can't lose.
You absolutely have my vote. I got 5 kids, and if they can get free ice cream once a week, you absolutely, surprisingly maybe, have my vote, Logan. Well, great first hour of the show with Greg Yao and Ken Kaiser. Coming up next on Faith Radio Mornings, we'll be joined in studio by Bill English, and we'll talk a little bit about starting a business at a late stage in life.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.